guys, welcome back to the 210 feet podcast. I'm Colin Manning, the guy who's got three bloody noses and lost almost three shirts to it on the past week on three different runs. And I'm joined once again by my co-host, Robbie Knight, who has been eagerly waiting to go on a rant about referees and the pro referee organization. But to start things off, we're going to actually dive into a bunch of stuff that's happened within MLS this week. I want to kind of start off with MLS Rivalry Week. Hasn't been super big of a deal in the past, but this week I feel like it kind of took a jump forward. And to kind of start off, the Philadelphia Union had a 7-0 win against DC United, which it ties for the biggest win in MLS history. What are your thoughts on that?
I think a couple of different things. I think we've talked about how Philadelphia is kind of, we might have mentioned it last week, about how they kind of are the U.S. youth national team at this point. And they were able to sub many of those guys who were at the CONCACAF U20 Championship onto the field at the end of yesterday's match or Friday's match. But they did not necessarily make a big difference in the match on Friday. Yeah. And I think we talked about last week how DC United is like the bottom of the East, the bottom.
They're not very good.
And we were trying to figure out how that was. And I think that was shown to us.
Yeah.
Because I think Philadelphia is a good team, but they're not like that good.
Yeah, for sure. DC just looked disastrous.
DC just looked disastrous.
I have heard, actually, there's a rumor that came out that Wayne Rooney this was just a rumor I heard where he could return to DC as their new manager, but not sure if that will happen or I guess we'll have to wait and see. So I feel like that would help them, but I feel like
they don't really know.
This season is in the dumps for them.
Well, yeah, I think we've kind of hit that point where they aren't making it. I don't know. Wayne Rooney as a manager is interesting to me because he was at Derby County in the English Championship, second tier of the sport over there. They got relegated, but it wasn't because of a poor managerial style. I think they got like 12 points docked at one point. It's subtracted because they had some sort of penalty or some contracting or something that they did. And everyone was very celebratory about how close they were to actually like not going down.
Yeah.
And they all put that credit onto him. And I think he had a bit of a lackluster kind of mess of the season in Derby County. But I feel like that'd be interesting. Like, he was phenomenal, as we've talked about, at DC United as a player.
Yes, exactly.
DC United is a team with, you know, loads of history. They're one of the only original ones left from the first year of the MLS about 27 years ago. And so, I mean, they are as historic as clubs come within the MLS, or at least in MLS history. I'd like to think that the Sounders are one of the most historic clubs
in the U.S.
Not necessarily within the MLS alone.
Yeah.
Like with their MLS.
Exactly.
History. And just because DC United has kind of been, you know, in the MLS, they've been a major club in the MLS for so long. They kind of are historic in that way.
And I think,
you know, unless you're a Philadelphia Union fan, you're probably kind of wanting them to do well. And I think you just want to competitively, and a score like 7-0 doesn't necessarily show a competitive lead.
Yeah, exactly. But apart from the 7-0 victory, there were a lot of other high scoring games, 3-2, 4-1. One of those other games was El Trapico. And this was highly anticipated as everyone thought this was going to be Gareth Bale's first game, but he ended up not playing due to like paperwork not coming through. And Jorginho Chiellini was also supposed to be his first game, but he has already picked up a minor injury with LAFC. So, but it still did not disappoint.
It really does.
Do you think El Tráfico is the best rivalry in MLS, or do you think that it could get there, or what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a really good rivalry. I think it's maybe one of like the few actual like true rivalries in MLS.
Yeah.
I think alongside like maybe some of the Canadian teams playing against each other, like Toronto and Montreal, there might be something there.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's up there. It's maybe the second best rivalry in the league. Only behind, I would say at this point, Cascadia. Because I don't think any of the other rivalries or teams really have that deep rooted history. I think Cascadia is by far the best rivalry,
for sure,
far and away. But I do think that they have been able to create quite a bit of hate quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think it creates some good matchups. It never disappoints as a match. Like, as a fixture, it always is enthralling. And I think that's good for the league as a whole. And I think the 3-2 victory for LAFC was big for them as a club.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think that it was a great game altogether.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. Kind of headed down south in Texas. We had Houston and Dallas, and I wasn't able to watch this game. I did quickly, briefly run through what happened, and it seems like it was one of the most hectic games of the weekend. The score line ended up being 2-2, so they drew, kind of like Real Salt Lake, Colorado, but that was also a very disappointing game that we will, for reasons that we'll get to later. But in this game, they were heading into the 90th minute. It was 1-1. It looked like it had been very choppy with like 6 or 7 yellow cards prior to the 90th minute. But anyways,
I see just like any of the other rivalries. I think
exactly.
It kind of started to boil over, and then it all
just,
like, the bubble burst.
The bubble burst after the 90th minute. Jesus Ferreira scores in 90+3 to put FC Dallas up 2-1. And then excuse me if I get this wrong. Tanej Hadebe scores in 90+11, 101st minute, which is the latest goal in regular time in MLS history to bring the scoreline back to 2-2 for Hills. 2-2 for Houston. And then in 90+13, Brandon Cervenia of Dallas gets a red card before the match ends. This, I feel like, kind of shows what rivalry should be and how intense it can be and how exciting the matches can be. Do you think that games like this are good for the league, and do you think it helps it grow even though everything happened after 90th minute? Or do you kind of hope these types of games start to become more weekly things, because we haven't seen a game like this in a while within the league?
I don't think we've seen a week like this. It's been as enthralling as this week was maybe all year.
Yeah.
Or maybe since the opening weekend, just because it is, you know, the opening weekend. I think these games are good for the league. I think something that I saw from someone, I can't remember who it was, but they noted that in the Premier League over England, they have a big six matchup every week.
Yeah.
Or most weekends. They try and spread them out. You don't put all three big six matches on the same weekend.
Uh-huh.
And I think for the MLS, you know, you're going to get more people tuned in when it's two big sides. I think the El Tráfico is the same way. I think that's, you know, there's stars on both sides. And I think as the MLS kind of slowly regroups and gets a new era of international stars in, I think you're going to see, you know, these bigger games again. But I think the league as a whole is just lacking on kind of those traditional rivalries. Because like in other leagues throughout the world, they've had decades upon decades to build these rivalries up.
For sure.
It's not just like team versus team, but it's a genuine like city hatred.
Yeah.
You don't like the
other team. Yep. Exactly.
You don't like the other team. You don't like the other city. I think the fact that LAFC and the Galaxy have been able to create such a strong rivalry so quickly, I think is impressive. And it just shows the level of those fan bases. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's kind of cool. I think that Houston and Dallas seems to be a really strong rivalry. I think that Cascadia is probably the biggest just because those two teams have had decades upon decades to build that rivalry.
Exactly.
And I think that's good for the league as a whole, is to have enthralling matchups. And I think the biggest thing that the MLS has struggled with
the New York Derby as well.
For me as a neutral or as someone who actually like really enjoys the MLS, it can be tough just to tune into a random mm-hmm. game on Saturday afternoon. I'm not going to sit down and watch Miami and Cincinnati for the heck of it. But you know, there is a good chance I would sit down and watch Burnley and Stoke, or Burnley and Palace. As a league, we just need to, with the lack of relegation and promotion, and you know, yes, you're fighting for just 7 playoff spots in this conference, but it's still, I feel like each match doesn't matter like it could. And I think if you spread these matches out, you can then say, okay, this week we had higher viewership. Whereas you don't kind of use all of your like big viewership number of free cards.
On 1 week. For sure. Yeah. I also feel like the MLS should have the flexibility to change the schedule, because you look at the NFL and there's been times where they schedule Sunday night games, Monday night games before a season starts, right? And the matchup isn't how you expect it going into the season, you know? So I know it's harder with a longer season to do something like that, but in the NFL, for example, they'll bump, say it was supposed to be Cincinnati and Miami playing Monday night football, but Miami has not been doing as great and the matchup's not highly as anticipated for Monday night football. So they will bump Miami, they'll bump that game back and instead bring forth Green Bay and Dallas because they know more people are going to watch that. So same thing on like Sunday night football, changing the times, things like that. It's harder to do in MLS with so many games so tightly compacted together, but the flexibility to change schedule, I feel like would be important. And along with that, I agree with the promotion relegation, but I feel like there's a lot of forced rivalries within MLS, like Orlando, Atlanta. I feel like that's a forced rivalry. Real Salt Lake, Colorado. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really feel hatred towards Colorado. Like, I don't hate them. And they're our quote-unquote rival when we have the Rocky Mountain Cup or whatever. But, like, I feel more hatred towards Sporting Kansas City or even Seattle or LAFC. Teams like that naturally those rivalries get built up. So I feel like instead of having a dedicated rivalry week, it's important to, like, for the league especially to grow, to have those matchups that people will tune into rather than just assume for the club, you know?
And I think, I mean, I understand it's really great for them to be like, okay, it's rivalry week.
This
is what we're doing. You can just sit down and you can just watch 20 rivalry matches and they're all meaningful and whatever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, I'm not just going to, if it's a college football Saturday, possibly I will sit down for 7 hours and watch game after game after game. I'm not going to just pay attention to Houston and FC Dallas or even like Sporting Kansas.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've watched 2 Real Salt Lake matches this year. And I'm not just going to sit down and watch Colorado and Real Salt Lake.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm not just going to...
No, for sure.
I will watch all the Sounders matches. I will watch all of the big... Like, I watched the... or at least most of El Tráfico. I'll watch the big games. But, like, I feel like as a league, they have to really tune you in to pay attention to just, like, this is a meaningful game.
Yeah.
And I get that not every game is going to be, like, meaningful. But I feel like there has to be some sort of storyline and there has to be something to get you in there. And when you're getting down to the nitty gritty where, like Cincinnati and Columbus, I guess there's something there, but like Cincinnati, Miami, like I said earlier,
yeah,
that game doesn't have a lot of meaning to it. When you're, it's, let's say it's two teams that are like bottom half of the conference, it's 2 weeks before the season ends. Neither team is fighting for anything. Like, there's no reason to watch that.
Like DC and Chicago.
Well, actually, that has some hilarity to it, just because it's like, oh, who's going to be worse than the other team? But I think the league, this is something that they've struggled with for a long time, and a lot of they need to create enthralling matchups for neutrals week after week. And I don't think that they're going to get just random fans streaming into their league, because there are just so many matches. And I feel like it's a bit like overwhelming to just have so many matches.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like that's the next step for the league. The league has developed a strong base with fans. Obviously, all fans are going to go watch their own team play, no matter who they're playing, because it's their own team. But personally, I'll tune into other NFL games, or I'll tune into random college football teams without Boise State. That's exciting.
Random, like, La Liga games on a weekday.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there was a point during quarantine where, like, during COVID, where I was home alone, and I was like, okay, well, oh, wow, why don't I watch, like, Valencia and I'll just watch random European games, but I feel like the MLS, there's kind of, maybe it's just a lack of midweek games in the middle of the day, and that's kind of when I'm at my most focused and, like, most bored. But I'm not gonna sit down on a Saturday afternoon and watch like Cincinnati and Miami. Because I feel like there's nothing really there to make me want to watch. I will sit down on a Saturday and watch like Old Dominion and Louisiana Tech play college football, but I feel like, you know, there's history there. Like, I feel like there's something there. It just makes it different, and maybe that's just like me.
Yeah.
But I would 100% rather sit down and watch. And I think I told you this. I was watching the NBA Finals with a friend a couple of weeks ago. You know, when they were still on, and I was like, I would rather watch Estonia and Kazakhstan in the Nations League than watch a random NBA game. But there's something about the MLS that I can't.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's just kind of,
Yeah, exactly.
Really playing for anything at some point.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the storyline that needs to be developed throughout the league. Obviously, you can't just switch to pro rail just like that. But I feel like there are ways, and I feel like the MLS and Apple's deal will help with this somewhat. But I feel like there are other ways that can help the league grow more and expand. So we are thrilled to watch other games. Obviously, as bigger names come in, the MLS continues to grow gradually. But the next step, I feel like, is having casual fans watch games of other teams that they wouldn't usually support or watch.
Well, and I feel like the playoffs kind of take away some of that each match, because, like, nobody cares in the Premier League, like, a team like Leicester, I mean, if they're fighting for fourth place, like, that's meaningful.
Yeah, exactly. But
it really doesn't matter where within the playoffs you are, just as long as you're in the seven.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter how you get there.
Yeah.
And your matches don't really matter anymore once you kind of clinch that spot or look like you're going to. And even one match isn't going to, like, make or break. A match in, like, May isn't going to make or break your entire playoff run.
Exactly.
You have a single elimination, one match chance in October that can do that, which I think then takes away from some of the meaning of, you know, those random matches in June and July.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it's kind of hard because with a table, if MLS were to go to Pro Rail, there's the CONCACAF Champions League and, like, the U.S. Open Cup and things like that. But there's not as many big tournaments that, like, MLS teams could fight for compared to, you know what I mean, compared to Europe. So that's also where it comes in, like, top four.
I think that's why, the MLS is trying – the MLS and Liga MX are trying to make the Leagues Cup such a big deal.
Yeah.
It's because the MLS kind of has a lack of options for additional matches. And, I mean, the MLS – season's so long.
It's crazy.
At this point, it's brutal. But I think that's why they're trying to make the League Cup, because you could have, if you're in England and you're a Chelsea fan, or even like a random like Championship team fan,
you're a
fan of Swansea, you know, you're in what, four different tournaments.
Exactly.
Just by showing up.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in the FA Cup, you're in the League, the Carabao Cup, there's the used to be called like the Papa John's trophy or Checkatory trophy or whatever. My FIFA knowledge is coming out strong. You're in the championship. Like, you have so many things just by showing up, and I feel like the MLS has just had that lack of, you know,
for sure.
Which then, you know, if you're bad, which a couple of teams here are, your season can kind of be over in the middle of June.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, you've already probably been kicked out of the U.S. Open Cup, and so you're just kind of out of options for the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely agree with that. It will be interesting to see where MLS goes in terms of rivalry week and in terms of scheduling new matches to help grow the league and things like that. With rivalry week brings a lot of controversy, though, and a lot of that this week especially, I feel like, and it has been happening recently, has been falling on the referees and a lot of blame on
what I'm reading.
Yeah, exactly. I have not been following that storyline as much as you, so would you mind kind of explaining to me and the audience kind of the issues with referees, and like, feel free to go on your rant about them, and I'll pitch in when I have something.
Well, I guess we can start off by recapping. The Sounders yesterday fell to, we're recording this on Sunday the 10th, I guess. Yesterday, the Sounders did their CCL banner raising. It was a phenomenal moment, but I kind of missed it because I kind of did an oopsie. But anyway, I locked my keys in my car, but we'll talk about that later. And then sick. I missed the first half hour of the Sounders match, but I watched it and I didn't miss much. There were three different moments in the Sounders 3-0 defeat to Portland yesterday. Including one specific one in which it was, I believe, a takedown of Mr. CR7 in the box. He was trying to like dribble to the ball. He was running towards it, and a Portland player comes and just chops him down at the ankles.
Yeah.
He might have been making a play for the ball. No one's really sure. Everyone thinks probably not, but here we are. So he makes a play at the ball. He chops the feet. And I'm pretty sure Roldan is the only one to play here. Roldan is the only one that's going to get to the ball in time. And he would have had a phenomenal opportunity to pass it in.
Yeah.
So he lands, you know, on his stomach or wherever. He, I think, might have touched the ball. He might have just been off the ball. As he gets chopped down to the ground. It's the whole hectic moment, as you've probably seen before. Everyone swarming the ref, trying to argue, okay, that's a penalty, that's not a penalty. I'm not even sure that he was shown a yellow for what was a reckless tackle. And, you know, the ref is standing in the middle of the field with his earpiece trying to figure out, okay, are we going to go to VAR on this? Because he did not call a penalty, he didn't call a foul, he didn't call anything. In my mind, and in everybody's mind, that's an instant penalty every time of day, every day of the week. It really did. I mean, it was 100% a penalty. You had everybody left, right, and center saying that was a penalty. They did not review it. VAR did not step in. Just like, play on. Keep it going. Let's go. But we still waited 3 minutes to figure out if we're going to VAR review it or not, which I think is ridiculous. In my mind, VAR is there to be a stopgap in any case that the referee might have missed a call. And we've seen total drama in England every time VAR is used, where everyone thinks, oh no, that was a mistake. I think that VAR is entirely too timid to be used. In my, you know, American, not a lot of attention span case, I think VAR should be used when there's any confusion, send it to VAR. We'll figure it out. Look at the screen. We'll do it.
It's there. Why not use
because
it?
I feel like that then, yeah, it's there. You might as well use it because
that's I feel.
It takes longer just to stand there and figure out, okay, are we going to VAR? Is it bad enough of a call that we have to VAR it? I feel like it should just be instant. Okay, is there any confusion? Is there any possibility that this was any sort of anything? Just send it to VAR.
Yeah, figure it out.
It's like a targeting in college football. Like if there's any sort of question about anything, send it to be.
Yes, I agree.
I feel like VAR is entirely too timid. If you're going to institute it, you might as well use it.
Exactly. That's what.
Now, you could argue that it is not always right.
I think
we saw that in the U.S. Women's National Team game against Haiti last week. There was someone who went and studs up on Kelly O'Hara, and it was called a red card, which it should have been. She had the stud mark to prove it. VAR then went back after it was called a red card. VAR went back and said, no, it's not a red card, which did not make many people happy.
Yeah.
I will say, however, though, I still think if you go back and review it, especially on potential penalties, like don't waste the time trying to figure out if you're going to VAR review it, just go take a look at
it.
It can't hurt anything. Take a couple minutes, take a second, just cut out the drama. Go over to your man. You have to at least have a somewhat okay VAR, which we did not have yesterday in the Sounders match. It was the same guy who had. Have you heard stories about the? I don't even know what U.S. Open Cup it was when Sounders and the Timbers played against each other in the U.S. Open Cup at Starfire, and there were like five red cards handed out, and we played with like seven players for half the match.
I think I've heard about that. Yeah.
Okay. That referee was the same guy who was the VAR today, yesterday.
What is his name?
Daniel Radcliffe or something.
Okay.
There's other refs.
Yeah.
And when I saw this list came out on Wednesday of who the refs were, let me tell you, people were abuzz.
People did
not think he should in any way, shape, or form have a role in this match. And he should not be anywhere near Sounders Timbers again. And I tend to agree after watching this. Because I think that he did not play any
in this
match. It was really just a disappointing match altogether. But honestly, this wasn't a like simple VAR mistake that we haven't seen very often. It's like a once in a lifetime occurrence. This is something that in the MLS,
yes, exactly,
we've seen so often, and it feels like
twice
a week the world goes ablaze
because of
some massive refereeing mistake, and then they take it back. And the little guy in the videos on Twitter is like, "Yeah, no, we messed up."
And yeah,
I think it's a league. At some point, they have to figure out that is not okay. Because this is like a weekly occurrence.
Yeah.
Multiple times a week occurrence where the world loses its mind because the referees messed up in an MLS game.
Yeah.
It's entirely too common. And I'm not going to bash on the refs too much because I realize it is a difficult job. It's not easy. It's a difficult position to be in. But I feel like a professional referee organization, which is responsible for organizing all of the referees in the United States and Canada, for the U.S. Soccer Federation matches, for the MLS, for Canadian matches, for the USL, for the NWSL, the U.S. Open Cup, everything like that, has to get their pooping over.
Yeah.
Because it has been quite messy for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And I feel like we just need, at some point, consistency within the calls, and that's not something that we've seen. And
yeah,
I think it's getting to a point where something has to change.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Something I kind of want to add on there is in the Real Salt Lake Colorado game, there's a penalty called on, I think it was Marcelo Silva, our center back, and it was a penalty. It was a soft penalty given. They didn't go to VAR at all. He listened, he like threw the little microphone or whatever for like 10, 15 seconds. And he should have taken a look because, in my opinion, I'm sure Colorado fans obviously did not think it was a penalty. It was a soft penalty. I'm not saying it shouldn't have been a penalty. It was a soft penalty. But it's a penalty that 50% of the time would be called and 50% of the time wouldn't be called. And that's where the consistency is lacking within referees in the United States. Brian Dunseth, every time he's RSL's commentator, well known for US soccer, every time there's something like this, he's just like, where has the consistency been? Because we have not seen consistency in a bunch of different forms, which is hard in soccer because there's no like defined straight on rules, you know. But pro needs to develop consistency, and I don't know if it's the referee at the younger levels in Idaho soccer. There's a huge lack of referees right now. There's a huge lack of referees across the country. I know. I don't know if that part of it falls into the ref struggles, but I know there's plenty of experienced referees that are highly capable of reffing a good match. And yeah, you're definitely right. Like, there's been multiple matches. Like, I feel like it's every 2 weeks or so in a Real Salt Lake game, there's a ref mistake that is a pretty big mistake, and it upsets fans, it upsets many people. Like, for example, beginning of the season, Dax McCarty's red card, it was late in the game. It was in the corner. I'm struggling to remember exactly what happened, but he got a red card and for going studs up into a player's ankles, but it took them forever to review it and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they just, if a referee has any question, if someone in VAR, they don't need to look at it 50 times and then go have the ref look at it 50 times, in my opinion. I feel like VAR should be there to be like, if you're hesitant, yes, I say give this a look. Or if the VAR sees it and they're like, oh no, that's definitely not this, or that definitely should be this call, they should just quickly do that. It should not be a process that lasts more than 2 minutes or 3 minutes. But in MLS, that I don't feel like they know how to use VAR, and I feel like it's just not consistent at all. And I feel like there always is the argument that, yeah, it shouldn't last long because of added time and actual expected playing time and whatnot. But VAR is there, so why not use it? And why not use it efficiently rather than, I feel like the refs half the time don't even know what they're doing as they're trying to sort out players and listen at the same time. And there's just no consistency within it.
Well, I feel like we've had this problem, you know, so many times.
Yeah.
In U.S. men's national team matches within CONCACAF. And I know we had this issue with the Sounders and the CCL. And we just kind of chalked it up to, oh, it's CONCACAF.
Which, yeah,
I think is a valid statement. CONCACAF has always been a mess, and it always will be, and we love it for it. But it's frustrating as a fan. And it's irritating.
Yeah.
To have such a lack of consistency. And
yes, I agree.
It's a struggle to watch happen.
Yeah, I know. It's something that obviously there's always referee problems in every sport, I feel like, but the lack of, I don't know, especially in MLS, it has not been good this year and years past as well. It's not even just this year or just this weekend. It's something that's been happening for a long time.
Correct. Yeah.
So,
and I think that, you know, makes the matches then less enjoyable. And I'm someone who thoroughly enjoys chaos. I thoroughly enjoy a chaotic CONCACAF match, but this is just, I feel like there's kind of a fine line between an absurd CONCACAF match, which we thoroughly will enjoy, and a just poorly reffed MLS match. And I'm not going to say CONCACAF refs are bad. I mean, they're not great, but I think that, you know, it's excusable. But I think in the MLS, it's kind of just getting frustrating at this point, because we expect, if the league wants to get better and grow internationally, you're going to have good refs, plain and simple. And I think, you know, CONCACAF is just kind of something we've grown to love. Just the chaotic mess that is CONCACAF matches, and in the MLS, it's just kind of disappointing.
Yeah, for sure. And if I'm correct, doesn't Pro have a Twitter or YouTube account or something where each week they come out and explain call certain calls and things like that? I haven't dug deep into that. I know you probably have a little bit. Isn't it like they come out and explain calls and stuff? But I wonder, I kind of want to go in and watch some of those and see if there's even consistency in that compared to the actual calls on the field.
And I think that you kind of have to, that's what I referenced when I was like the guy on Twitter in the videos, like just comes out every week and is like, yeah, no, we messed up. Because I know the Sounders have had that like twice.
Yeah.
So far this season. And it's kind of like, well, it can't be, you have the VAR.
Yeah.
It's there to make sure the call is correct. And to be that backstop. And it isn't used correctly.
Yeah. And it's easy for Pro to go out and say, yeah, we messed up. That's easy to say. It's something they haven't done. They go out and say they messed up and then they just continue on like nothing happened. They don't actually change, which I don't know where that stems from necessarily or how it can be better. Just the consistency, it disrupts MLS matches greatly. I know it upsets players. I know it upsets coaches. And I know it especially upsets fans. So I don't know the best way to fix it, quote unquote, but there needs to be some consistency developed.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even know what else to say.
So that's our referee rant. We'll be interested to see how it plays out the rest of the year, I guess. And obviously one thing I kind of want to add on real quick is the momentum of games. Some games refs take over the game and it's the refs. And they don't, they don't let them play. And then some games are like, well, I don't know, where like the ref is there to make the calls and he does his job and he gets out on these and the teams play. There's a line between letting the teams play
and stepping in. Matches, they just let the chaos ensue. That's one thing that I can give them is they let them just play through the madness and they let the madness happen. Whereas in the MLS, it's the most choppy experience you've ever seen.
Yeah, it's the ref is either stepping in and taking power in the game or he's letting them play and that's just chaos. There's no in between. Usually I'm not saying this is an every game thing, but it happens quite a bit.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. So now kind of stepping away from the ref rant for a little bit, I kind of want to quickly bring up some U.S. men's national team players in Europe who have been on the move recently. Tyler Adams joins Jesse Marsh for the third time in his career, this time at Leeds, the Premier League club. And then Luca De La Torre, one of my favorite U.S. men's national team players, joins Celta Vigo in the La Liga. They're a mid-table team. And and then along with that, Christian Pulisic has been rumored to make a move to Juventus and join U.S. men's national teammate Weston McKennie in Juventus. So I guess we'll start off with Pulisic and the rumors. What do you think? Do you think Juventus would be a good move for him? Do you think for his overall career before the World Cup? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm just frustrated with Chelsea. Like, I feel like it's just every day. It's something else. It's just drama and chaos.
Yeah.
And I think with Raheem Sterling coming in, that takes kind of a role away from Pulisic. Because somebody else is going to be squeezed. And I feel like at some point you just have to say enough and you just have to leave. And I think by the looks of things, he's going to be staying. That's the way it seems to me, is that he'll be staying. I'm just hopeful that he gets playing time and gets enough playing time to be in a good spot headed into a World Cup.
Yeah,
and that's really just my hope, and is given playing time in a position that he is used to, that is not right wing back.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I feel like I still stand right now. He needs playing time before World Cup. But then there's also like a little part of me that's like kind of happy he's staying and kind of happy that he won't get much playing time because he's very injury prone. So that's one side of things. But like, because you don't want him to go in and get injured, and staying at Chelsea when he maybe doesn't get as much playing time is less likely chance you get injured compared.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where
it sounds bad.
Yeah. It sounds bad, but like for the well-being of the team, like which would you rather have him come in fresh or have the risk of him getting injured? That's how honestly, I kind of feel about other players as well. Yeah.
Just move him to like an MLS side. Just having his playing time there. He can be a major like we could probably throw him in our midfield and he can take the spot that has been opened up by Joao Paulo leaving and you know, some injuries. Like I feel like we could make a spot for him. He can come over here on a 6-month loan and we can make it happen.
Yeah, for sure. I personally would not like that to happen. I think but just personally, I know you would very much enjoy that, but
don't have the roster spots for it. We don't have the spots.
Yeah, so
how about we take Pulisic and Chelsea to take Rusev? Like it's a straight across.
Oh, just a straight.
It would open a DP spot for us that he could take.
That'd be interesting.
Nothing against Rusnak, but honestly, just straight across.
Yeah,
straight across.
Yeah, yeah. But I definitely see that happening. Yeah, I think you've predicted the future.
Got an ESPN alert.
What? Nothing. Oh, yo, no way. Christian Pulisic to see. I'm just kidding.
Wow.
But I'm losing my train of thought. Tyler Adams. That was where I was going. Okay, Tyler Adams to Leeds United rejoins Jesse Marsh. I feel like this is a good move for Leeds. I don't know how good of a move it is for Tyler Adams himself because I was coming from Leipzig, I was kind of hoping he would be able to take the next step up, you know? And I feel like Leeds is kind of like same level, which makes it harder for him to take the next step up in the future. But for Leeds, I feel like he's going to fit Jesse Marsh's role after playing with him at Red Bulls and Leipzig. So, yeah, I don't really know where I stand, but I'm excited because I like Leeds.
I think on the club level, this is a downgrade.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Leipzig is probably top something. Like, they're of course, like, a Champions League side in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
They're top four consistently. You know, it's common for them to be top four. They won the DFB Pokal, their domestic cup, this past year, which, you know, I don't necessarily like Leipzig as a club, but I guess respect. He was getting pretty decent playing time.
Not amazing, but
well, I mean they play 34 Bundesliga matches a year and he saw an appearance in 24 of them. He played in 5 of their 6 Champions League matches. I mean, he was getting really good playing time, I think. I will say, however, I think just from a competition level, the Leipzig team was more competitive than the Leeds team is. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But I think him being in the Premier League, I don't think is something I'm necessarily against.
Yeah, like I feel agree. Like
on that competition level, it's gone up. Just because I think, you know, we've seen stat after stat. Yeah, the Premier League is pretty much the best league in the world.
Yeah.
And I think, I guess on that front, that's good for him to, you know, move somewhere else. He was at Leipzig for a while, I think 3 seasons. After moving from
New York Red Bulls.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think I'm not necessarily strongly opposed to the deal. I think it's an interesting move.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he will probably be getting quite a bit of playing time just because I feel like Jesse Marsh and him, you know, have that relationship where he will get quite a bit of playing time.
Exactly.
And so I think it'll just be interesting to see you know, in this first, like, I feel like by the end of September, we'll kind of be able to see what his role is in the side and what Berenson's role is.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree. I think he's going to help Leeds a lot, help Jesse Marsh's playing style. And we'll see how it goes for him and if he'll be able to take the next jump after Leeds, if Leeds ends up helping his resume, things like that. And the last move I want to talk about is Luca De La Torre. This move to Celta Vigo almost seems like I don't know. It just seems like really good. Like, I don't have any complaints about it. Like, he's going to La Liga. There's not many Americans in La Liga, or there haven't been in the past either.
There's Matthew Hopp. There's someone in Valencia, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, there's Serginho Dest. There's...
Yeah.
There's people. Like, there's five.
Yeah, but like...
All these are Scott.
But, like, no, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like there's as many as Bundesliga or Premier League. But I feel like this move is just going to be good for him. It's going to be more competition than, frick, what club is he coming from? That's what I'm like. But it's going to be a lot more competition. Hercules. Yeah, Hercules in the Netherlands. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's going to be a lot more competition. Yep. It's going to be a lot more competition from that and a team standpoint and at a league standpoint. La Liga is obviously one of the top leagues in the world. And joining this, he went on for, I think it was for $2 million, a $2 million transfer fee, which isn't bad. It was just like a reasonable price. I feel like this is going to be good for him. I feel like it's going to kind of help him take the next step in his career after being good at Hercules. So, yeah, I just feel like this is a really good move for him as a player. I'm not sure. I don't know much about Celta Vigo, or I don't follow the La Liga very much, other than the top four teams. So I guess we'll see how this goes, and I guess we'll see how he ends up playing, and hopefully improves, just as a player in general, as he's gained more competition.
U.S. throughout history has had 10 different players in La Liga, without including Luca De La Torre. So for a combined, I believe, oh, I lost it, like 8 goal contributions was less than quite a few countries.
Yeah.
Yunus Musa, that's who's at Valencia.
Oh, yeah.
Serginho Dest is currently at Barcelona. Matt Mazzaga is at Alves. And Shaq Moore is at Levante.
That's what I'm talking about.
So, there's quite a few.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't feel like the production there, like, has been, I don't know. And I feel like he's going to learn a lot playing in La Liga, because Spanish teams are a lot more, like, technical, I would say. And they play kind of different than La Liga teams. I mean, than Premier League teams. So, I don't know. I just hope he ends up learning a lot and can contribute what he learns to the U.S. men's national team.
I agree.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know. I'm not a Luca De La Torre fanboy like you are, so I don't really have, like, if you talk about, like, Jordan Morris, or who else was it? I guess Christian.
Yeah.
Who was the other guy that I was talking about last week?
Gio Reyna. Gio Reyna. Team, yeah, BC plays for Dortmund, and you're a huge Dortmund fan.
I mean, I'm again FIFA, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of Dortmund fan.
Yeah, that's your Bundesliga team. There you go.
There you go.
All right. Yeah. Well, I think that is going to do it for today's episode. Thank you guys all for listening, and hopefully you enjoy us ranting about referees, and we shall talk to you guys next week. Adios.